This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And you're looking at February alone being the driest month of over 100 years. So you're looking at not an isolated event, but an accumulation of connected climatic shocks over a sustained period of time.
That was Machinda Marongwe, the Lusaka spokesman for British aid group Oxfam, on the factors fostering lasting drought in southern Africa. Details coming up. Also, limited access to sub-Saharan Africa communities suspected of having mpox is hampering medical efforts. And dozens of people are missing after a dam collapsed due to heavy rainfall in Sudan. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A drought that started early this year is intensifying across southern Africa, leaving almost 70 million people in urgent need of aid in countries including Lesotho, Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. In a recent summit in Harare, regional leaders heard how crops and livestock herds have been wiped out, adding to food shortages. Darren Taylor reports.
British aid group Oxfam says Zambia's just one of several southern African countries experiencing a serious humanitarian crisis. The charity spokesman in Lusaka, Machinda Marongwe, says heat waves worsened by the El Nino weather phenomenon have battered Zambia's poorest communities, especially in rural areas which rely on rainfall for agriculture.
We are in the worst scenario and the situation is going to get worse. Just to give you an indicator of how bad the situation is, the dry spell has been the worst in over 40 years. And you're looking at February alone being the driest month of over 100 years. So you're looking at not an isolated event, but an accumulation of connected climatic shocks over a sustained period of time, leading to increased vulnerabilities.
In May, the outgoing chair of the Southern African Development Community, Angolan President João Lourenço, appealed for $5.5 billion in humanitarian assistance for drought victims in the region. On Saturday, he told the SADC summit donations had not materialized, leaving tens of millions hungry, malnourished, and short of water. Louis van Ravestein is head of agribusiness at South Africa's Standard Bank.
This period, about 51 days in Jan and Feb, which was critical for the production period. There was no rain and we saw very dry and hot conditions. Mainly impacted small-scale farmers and medium-sized farmers that does not have access to irrigation. Zambia lost a million of the hectares of their crop, which is half of their crop. Zimbabwe also have a lot of strain. Botswana production is down. South Africa production is down year on year. Countries like Malawi, Mozambique, Eswatini, the production is also down due to this drought period that we've had.
Maize meal is Southern Africa's staple food, but Van Ravestein says the drought has decimated maize crops.
We have seen prices of maize increasing of late. That's because of this period we're going through and the demand that's in the region. SADC countries will have a worse impact. There is definitely shortages and they will have to import from other countries. That obviously brings additional costs. The positive, however, is globally is a surplus in grain production in the later season. So there's not a shortage worldwide. It just needs to be imported if it can't be supplied by South Africa or by Tanzania into the neighboring countries.
But the chairman of Grain South Africa, Derek Matthews, doesn't think the country will be able to help others with maize supplies.
We're not expecting a lot of exports this year. We don't think that there'll be sufficient supplies for a huge export program. We're probably going to have enough grain for South Africa at this point in time. If it doesn't rain, the damage is going to become more extensive, and then we probably will end up not exporting at all.
SADC's Lourenço has reiterated his appeal for aid from the international community. unless help comes soon, he says, many people will suffer and perhaps even die. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Health authorities in sub-Saharan Africa say armed gangs and rebel groups are obstructing their access to towns and villages that are suspected of having mpox cases. The United Nations says international awareness is needed to reduce the surge of cases of the virus, which has been designated a public health emergency of international concern. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Officials in the Central African Republic, or CAR, say health workers striving to contain an outbreak of the mpox virus are complaining of difficulties gaining safe access to towns and villages where armed gangs operate. CAR government troops are fighting rebels to stop violence and political turmoil that began in 2013. Pierre Somse is CAR's health minister.
Cette augmentation exponentielle est observée au niveau mondial.
Somse says armed groups should know that civilians whose lives are threatened by an unprecedented mpox virus outbreak need urgent assistance. He says from less than 10 suspected cases in 2023, CAR has reported about 45 mpox cases this year, and additional victims in bush and remote areas may be unreported. The Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, is another country with internal arms conflict, and WHO says that the country has more than 95% of the total of about 17,000 cases of mpox reported globally this year. The Central African State reports close to 530 deaths from the disease. The UN says within the past few months, the virus has spread to 5 DRC neighbor nations, CAR, Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda. Longunza Malasi Joseph is a former Doctors Without Borders staff member and is now a political advisor to Democratic Republic of Congo's environment minister. He says the virus spreads rapidly because humanitarian workers have difficulties securely visiting conflict-prone sub-Saharan communities. Longunza spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Kinshasa, capital of DR Congo.
People run from areas where there is conflict. And in that running away, there is no observation of hygiene. People just run for their lives. This poses a problem because you can't teach people to observe health measures when they are first running for their own lives. Health professionals sometimes have to cross areas that are not secure. They can be attacked, they can be killed, and so forth.
Cameroon officials also say rebels are making it nearly impossible for health workers to have safe access to English-speaking regions where there are ongoing conflicts between government troops and armed separatists fighting to carve out independent states or regions from the French-majority country. Since July, Cameroon has reported at least 40 suspected mpox cases with 3 deaths. Nigeria also says its humanitarian workers are being restricted from educating civilians to protect themselves from pox after 32 states reported at least 1 confirmed case of the mpox virus. Nigeria has been fighting for more than 10 years against Boko Haram terrorists near its northern border with Chad, Cameroon, and Niger. Niger, Chad, Cameroon, CAR, and DRC say they are deploying government troops to protect both civilians and health and humanitarian workers from rebels and arms groups. None of the sub-Saharan countries have reported deaths of humanitarian workers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Libya's parliament, controlled by the eastern-based government, has voted to end the mandate of the rival Tripoli-based government of national unity, GNU. The parliament is led by Prime Minister Abdulhamid Dibiba, who was originally intended to serve on an interim basis, then refused to step down until elections could be held. The parliament also voted that the eastern-based government of Osama Hamad was the only legitimate government in Libya until elections for a new unified government. Wolfgang Pochtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi whether these developments could complicate the Libyan crisis.
Actually, I do not expect this decision to have any kind of practical impact. The paper was already previously sacked by the HOR in March 2022, and the GNU has been ever since labeled by them as an expired or as an illegitimate government. Osama Hamad was already appointed prime minister by the HOR after the resignation of Fatih Bashagha in May last year. The HOR has no means whatsoever to enforce its decision. It has no influence whatsoever on the ground in Tripoli. According to a decision of the Supreme Judicial Council in Tripoli, the paper's protege, Mohammed Akal, has lost the elections for the chair of the High Council of State, the Tripoli-based second chamber of Libya's parliament. The paper's former ally and now fierce opponent, Khaled al-Mishri, took over. And al-Mishri is probably ready to support a new unity government. So it is very well possible that he will find an agreement with the HR about such a new government. However, this does not necessarily mean the political end of the paper or that he is being sacked as a prime minister. Nevertheless, quite a lot of clouds on the horizon for the paper.
In response to the vote by the House of Representatives, the Government of National Unity said that it deals with these repeated statements as a non-binding political opinion and that it derives its legitimacy from the Libyan political agreement, which stipulated that the government would end its duties by holding presidential and parliamentary elections. What's your take on that?
This shows once more that the paper does not take the HOR and its decision for serious. But nevertheless, he's in real troubles right now, not only because of the new HCS leadership. Even more problematic for him are the developments around the Central Bank of Libya. Access to the oil revenues of the Central Bank of Libya is vital for the Baber to stay in power. He needs the money to fund the militias in Tripoli loyal to him. Without money, it will be quite difficult for him to maintain this loyalty. But CBL Governor Al-Sadiq Al-Kabir refuses to fund the Baber's GNU as he did over the years before. In contrast, he seems even ready to finance the budget proposed by the Baber's rival government in Benghazi, Osama Hamad's government. The budget which was recently approved by the House of Representatives last Sunday, in a major development, the Presidential Council has fired Al-Kabir. But for the time being, Al-Kabir refuses to hand over power. Al-Kabir is backed by the High Council of State and the House of Representatives, who claim that the Presidential Council does not have the right to fire or to appoint a CBL governor. According to them, and I think they are right, this right belongs to the legislative. So the struggle for control of the CBL is not yet over, but this might be a struggle which is decisive political future of the Baber.
The embassy of the United States in Libya has denied issuing a statement rejecting the recent decisions taken by the HOR regarding the legitimacy of the Government of National Unity. It said the United States continues to fully support UN facilitation of an inclusive political process based on dialogue and compromise among all Libyan parties and based on the principles of the Libyan political agreement and the Geneva process. What does that mean?
Some Libyans are really innovative in creating and spreading fake news like this one. The problem is that these fake news are frequently taken for serious by quite a number of people in Libya. With regard to the role of the United States, I would say there are only very few nations with a really significant influence on the ground in Libya, especially countries like Turkey and Greece. The United States is certainly not among these influential countries. This is also because the U.S. sees rather a low priority for Libya in its foreign policy. And consequently, there is no significant engagement by Washington. And this will most probably not change in the near future, and certainly not before the American presidential elections.
That was Wolfgang Pochtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance said Sunday that he won't impose a federal abortion ban in the United States if he and Donald Trump win the White House. Meanwhile, the Democratic presidential ticket of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz keeps pushing its messaging for reproductive rights and announced a record-breaking number of campaign donations. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance was asked Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press whether he would commit to not imposing a national abortion ban if elected in November.
I can absolutely commit that.
His answer came 2 days after Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform, quote, "My administration will be great for women and their reproductive rights." But with some Republicans in Congress actively pushing for abortions to be banned nationwide, Vance was pressed further on NBC on whether Trump would veto that type of legislation if he were to return to the White House.
I think he would. He said that explicitly, that he would.
The Harris-Walz Democratic presidential campaign warns that reproductive rights would be obliterated under a Trump administration. Vice presidential nominee Tim Walz spoke about the matter during the recent Democratic National Convention.
And they will ban abortion across this country, with or without Congress.
The DNC overall was hailed as success by analysts. Democrats hope it will translate into a bump in the polls. Adding to the celebratory mood, the Harris-Walz campaign announced Sunday that it has raised $540 million since it launched. Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent, has expressed cautious optimism that Vice President Kamala Harris's road to the White House is clear. Sanders appeared Sunday on ABC's This Week show.
I think it's going to be a rough campaign. I think the vice president now has a very good chance to win it. She's certainly going to win the popular vote by millions of votes, and I think she has a great chance to win many of the battleground states.
Republican Senator Tom Cotton disagrees. Cotton was also interviewed on ABC.
Donald Trump has been president before. The American people know what he did. They know that he understands the kind of pain they've suffered for the last 4 years under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And I think that's why they're ready to return Donald Trump to the White House.
Both campaigns have several events planned for this week. Vice President Harris and her running mate will kick off a bus tour in Georgia on Wednesday. Trump is expected to hold a town hall Thursday in Wisconsin and a rally Friday in Pennsylvania. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Sudan's health ministry says a dam had collapsed due to a heavy rainfall in the eastern Red Sea state, sending water flooding over nearby homes. Local media said dozens of people are missing. In a statement late Sunday, the ministry said the Arabat Dam had collapsed. According to the Associated Press, resources have been deployed to the area to help the people who have been stranded. The statement said at least 4 people had died but did not give an estimate of how many people were missing. However, a local official told the Sudanese news site Al Tagir that he believed there to be at least 60 dead, and another outlet, Midamik, reported more than 100 people were missing. An American Grammy-winning rapper, Macklemore, says he has canceled his October show in Dubai in protest over the United Arab Emirates' support for Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, a warring party in the country's civil war. The musician says the situation in Sudan is urgent, horrific, and it's going largely unnoticed globally. He says in an Instagram post on Saturday that he's following the lead of Sudanese organizers and activists who are trying to be heard. Neither the UAE's foreign ministry nor its global media office immediately responded to Reuters' request for a response to Macklemore's decision to cancel. And now, time for Sports Roundup. We have VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So the tennis U.S. Open begins today. Who are among big names we can expect to have a good tournament?
Absolutely, Hayes. So if we're just going to start it off, the defending champions always have to be in the conversation. Coco Gauff and Novak Djokovic are the two champions for the men and the women's side. I would definitely say that Djokovic is in a little bit better form currently than Coco is, but you definitely cannot root out either of them. I really like the fact that Djokovic is he's on the better side of the bracket. Interestingly enough, you have individuals like Sinner, Alcaraz, and Daniil Medvedev, who are, you know, who could potentially have spoiled this for him, but he's on the other side. So sometimes when you get a draw like that, it's really good. But for Coco, I would say that Sabalenka is really on form at the moment currently. So I think that'll be her biggest challenge in defending her title. So very, very interesting stuff when we have tennis coming around this time of the year.
I love tennis. Yes. And in the world of football, Mokbil, some big names across leagues like the English Premier League and La Liga had some big results. Fill us in on it.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Yes, this was an action-packed weekend, but I feel like every weekend when football is back on, it's so much action going on, especially at the beginning of the season where teams are really trying to get their footing right. You don't want to be left behind too early on. So if we're just looking at the English Premier League, let's look at a couple of the games. I would say that Brighton obviously had a really good game. They've yet to lose as well. They defeated Manchester United 2-1. That was a huge result for them. Manchester City coming through with their second win 4-1 against Ipswich Town. This team is a very small team that just came up from the league underneath the championship. Arsenal versus Aston Villa. Aston Villa was able to beat Arsenal twice last year and potentially may have spoiled them from winning the Premier League last year by defeating them at home. And Arsenal was able to get it back and win 2-0. So that was a huge win for them. And also, we can't forget about Liverpool. Liverpool wins 2-0 against Brentford. That was a huge win for them. Oh, lastly, Chelsea. Huge. They lost their first game against Manchester City, but they came back and won 6-2. Yeah, 6-2. And then if we quickly touch on La Liga, Real Madrid, you know, this team that they've built was able to win 3-0 against Valladolid. Atletico Madrid, who has had a really good offseason, were able to win 3-0 against Girona. And Barcelona were able to win 2-1 against Athletic Club.
Wow, Arsenal, what a sweet revenge.
Ooh, it was good, it was good. It was quite the game, it's quite the game.
And the boxing world has some interesting news with Floyd Mayweather fighting John Gotti III in an exhibition fight. What was your takeaway from the fight?
Interestingly enough, before we even really get into the fight, John Gotti III is the grandson of the former gangster, John Gotti, yes, who was really well known for some of his activities in New York during the time. But to see his family still in the limelight is very interesting.
Amazing.
His grandson is a boxer. Wouldn't say that he's, really in the likes of, contention. That's why he's fighting in these exhibition fights against Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather is still trying to stay active and relevant. These are not really boxing fights that he still continues to fight at a high level. He's retired from that. He does these exhibition fights. It was a sleeper of a performance, to say the least, in Mexico City. The fans were not impressed.
And VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tian Wong, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.